Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Reagan and Haig, Mr. Bagan and Friend, Mrs. Thatcher, the Paisley, Mr. Brezhnev and Party, the ghost of McCarthy, and the memories of Nixon. And now, adding color, a group of anonymous Latin American meatpacking glitterati.
I imagine Margaret Thatcher to have a predator in her vagina.
If anybody in the world.
Exactly, yeah.
If, vagina, it's Margaret Thatcher, pretty sure.
If anybody could make me believe in a vagina, didn't it?
I'm sorry, I hope that. But no, she did some pretty terrible things in there, war related, from my limited understanding, but not to, you know, put down Margaret Thatcher. I don't want to receive emails from angry people.
you could send
put down Margaret Thatcher. Talks about her vagina. You know how inappropriate that is. Yeah, sorry. All right. What is this? Is this John just walks away in the middle of shows now? Is that what's happening?
Apparently. I see there's like four different Be Right Back. Be right back.
What is this? Maybe he's doing a cleanse and he's got to flush it out.
Maybe he really likes Margaret Thatcher. Way to go, David. You offended him.
I mean, he's got freaking what's her name as a Skype pick. What's her name?
Dorothy from Golden Girls.
Yeah, is it? It's Dorothy.
That's well, that's the character's name. Yeah, it's Dorothy.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. It's been a while with the Golden Girls. I can't remember. But yeah, when we started out this show with the reading of different things, like you read a letter and I was reading some comments, it reminded me of like that. Now we're like Ann Landers. Now we're like one of those radio shows that just like reads letters from fans. And here we have a letter from...
Remember we did that episode 50. We did do a sort of mailbag.
That was fun. That was cool.
That was fun. You know what we should do? Let's see. Oh, here. All right, let's do this. I'm gonna start reading you some emails.
Cool.
I just got this one yesterday. This is from Darren Williams. Subject: D'Angelo's new album reference Adventures of Marty McFly and Doc Brown. I know you like far-out stuff, therefore allow me to put this into your consideration. D'Angelo released his third album on Monday, 15th December 2014. Three songs on it got my attention, these being 1,000 Deaths, which mention about Satan being in control of the New World Order, and then a track called Back to the Future Part 1 and Back to the Future Part 2. Now, I wonder if the overt Back to the Future reference is a clue to a specific scene in both films, or could the album actually be in sync to both films? Additional, I've only just known about your work via following James Evan Plato, hence watching his lecture on The Simpsons that he did for you. These are two articles of mine that I did that deal with sync occurring in music and cinema. And he links these up. GeneralJimmy.com, How a Woman That Placed a Bet on a Horse Changed the World Forever. And RobertPhoenix.com, Decoding the Summer Cinematrix with Darren Williams. Let me know your views, but please forward my hunch on D'Angelo doing a Pink Floyd Wizard of Oz.
Haha. So he was a junkie, right? I mean, he was big at one point, and then he went in this whole, like, he just lost everything, and then somebody helped him out and helped him produce a new record, right? Isn't that that was the thing? He was like basically sponsored, but he cleaned up, and then somebody like gave him a chance and helped him produce something again.
I hear people talking. I've been too busy to listen to any new music, so I'm
completely. I haven't heard it. I have a housemate who had heard it, and he was. Yeah, it's all right. You know, it's kind of like, but it's an interesting story. It's like this guy had just completely dropped off the map because he had gotten into, you know, some type of substance abuse. And then this is his comeback, I guess. But his comeback sounds an awful lot like what he was doing before. It's not really that much different. But yeah, but that's an interesting idea. I would just say Back to the Future Part 1 and 2 could refer to the fact that you'll probably have to repeat the album if you're watching it with a movie, you know.
If anyone wants to try the experiment, he's saying this album might sync up to that movie. I think it's worth a worthwhile experiment. That's a good catch, at least a good weed.
Yeah, it's a super good lead. I like that.
Just to interject real quick, I think Bill mentioned when I was talking to him that he synced up the new Exodus movie with the Swans. I think that's the right band. And if so, again, like something else maybe people want to sync up to. If you're going to go fucking see Exodus, maybe.
That means walked into the theater again with headphones and drowned out the sound with his own in the theater. That's an interesting move.
I'm pretty sure that's what he was saying. I could be forgetting, but that seemed to be the story.
He would have been, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done it before. I mean, I can't remember what it was. He did Dark Side of the Moon.
Well, he was talking about how he was connecting with like a very archetypal story told across thousands of years. It was almost like, Ellen, I think we talked about time travel and history, or maybe all three of us were talking about it and how those three things overlap and what that means and what the experience is like. And when he said that, it communicated that very well to me in an experiential sort of way. And if you can drown out the bad acting, it's probably pretty cool, actually. So
stunning. Yeah.
Hey, here's another email from someone named Chris Miller. Hello there. I just found your site today, and what a wonderful place. I have some sync videos you may find interesting and worthy of adding to the content of your site. They can be found on my YouTube channel. The first example is the movie The Cell with Jennifer Lopez and the Mars Volta album Deloused in the Comatorium.
I watched The Cell with Tool's undertow, and it was
He says, The Cell is about entering a serial killer's mind. The concept album is an hour-long tale of Serpent Tax, a man who enters a week-long coma after overdosing on a mixture of morphine and rat poison. I synced up the music for right when she enters his mind on the movie and crazy shit follows. I divided up the videos in one-song increments. Here's the first. He gives an example that he actually has on YouTube. Subsequent parts can be found on the channel as well as other sync videos for different movies. You are welcome to use them on your site if you desire. Regards, Chris. And so look up The Cell Meets the Mars Volta, Deloused in the Comatorium on YouTube. Here's someone else saying divination, subject divination. You might find some interest in the divination method that I invented. I use dice that have letters on them. You get 125 letters from a dice throw. Make words and sentences. I teach it for free. They buy the dice and send me the letters, and I decode the letters and send them the code messages. If you'd like to see my book files, I could send them. My book is on Amazon. It's called Dice Code Divination.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's really neat.
You know what I love with the word chance? Etymologically, is supposed to mean literally to fall. And I guess it's either a reference to dice or the I Ching or something, that when you drop the thing, there's only, but it's funny because chance, the word etymologically, implies that there's only so many ways that it can land, right? I mean, it's within a framework. So chance isn't random. It's that whole question of how random is random. But then at the same time, I also like chance being to fall. If you look at like the fall, you know, it comes with the fall in the garden, and then everything. There's this idea of Genesis, Exodus, and et cetera, that the fall fall that gets initiated. It's just a perpetual fall that they keep falling, and then it's further and further exiled. That there's the initial exile, and then we're but there's that idea too that no matter how far we roam from home, the universe remains our center or whatever, you know. But I don't know. I felt like dropping that in there.
Let's see. This one I actually discussed. Sorry. I discussed this on Type 1 Radio, so I won't go too deep into it, but just to kind of reread it. Hi, everyone. I think a lot of your listeners hear your show on the go, like working or jogging or whatever. The problem is that is you just tend to forget to make a donation. When you hear, please make a donation at the start of a show, you feel guilty. That is not the best thing to enjoy your shows. People are used to pay and receive, not vice versa. Let the listener pay for the radio shows. I don't believe you lose that much listeners. The advantage is also, if you pay, you want to make the best of your investment, so you listen as much shows as possible. Much love from Germany, Bernie. And we actually discussed this.
You know what? I didn't know the second ending of that, because you guys emphasized the first half of it.
I wasn't trying to emphasize, but yes.
But
yeah.
that ending is interesting, and that's the direction they want to. Like, yeah, hey, just saying, like, fucking monetize it.
Just charge for it. Yeah, just charge for it.
I respect that opinion.
That's, yeah, absolutely. No, I said it was a really, I think that whole thing came across very different. And that's why I was trying to, but it was so funny because actually the person ended up, I don't know if you heard that part, but that guy actually wrote into the show. We were talking about his email and he was listening live. Oh, cool. And he wrote to them. So it was pretty funny.
Is he offended or something?
Well, apparently he's friends with them. So he said, like, basically, hey, assholes, why are you talking shit about me? No, he sounds like a really nice guy. Cool. And he was explaining his point was more that most people have downloaded a podcast, so you're listening, you're not near your computer. He was saying, like, so it's pretty often that even you could say, please donate, but the person, more often than not, they're going to be in their car or out doing some sort of activity while they're listening, and they're not going to get a chance to actually donate at that moment. So he was saying it's kind of useless in that respect.
Yeah. At the same time, it's like, it's not. It's just a reminder. So I don't know. It's a no harm, no foul thing for me. I don't know. I don't get that point of view necessarily. I do and I don't, you know. It's like, okay, yeah, I get the intellectual argument of it, but is there really any emotion behind that opinion? I don't know. It's like, everyone's conviction is different, though. So I respect that, and that's all good. But it's just interesting to come face to face with different points of view that way and be like, what is that exactly? And how do I relate to that? It's cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's two other emails that are similar, like, I guess this was around the time of Always Record 97. Here's one saying, someone, I want to encourage you guys to monetize your efforts. I've listened to all of the Always Record 97, and what I hear is a group on the precipice of financial success. All that's left is for you guys to jump over the ledge. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the results. Some free content with archives behind a paywall makes sense. So there was a few different emails around that time. People talking about different sort of financial aspects of what we can do in that way. That was another one like that.
I really enjoyed the emails. I'll say that much. Like, very, almost all of them, whether I agree or disagree, are usually pretty well written. And that's something I can respect, considering how progressively more illiterate our society is becoming. So it's really true that this community attracts very intelligent people, agree or disagree with where they come down on certain subjects. I'll say that much. So these are fun to go through.
Here's one from a gentleman named John Kokos. Says, are you gentlemen familiar with the Illuminati Motorcycle Club of Bavaria from the West Coast? A very real and mysterious group with occult overtones. Never.
I have also never heard of that, but I'd be interested to know more. I guess we'll have to look into it.
I didn't realize my microphone was on. What did you call it?
Go ahead, David.
What did you call it? What did he call it? What?
Shit, no, I'm sorry. I'm trying to go through all these things. Illuminati Motorcycle Club of Bavaria.
Oh, that sounds super whatever. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I shouldn't say that. Bavaria, huh? Bavarian Illuminati. Interesting.
No, the Illuminati and motorcycles go together, you know, hand in glove.
Really?
I think so.
They did in that Twilight Zone called Black Jackets.
There was something like that in the Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
What happened?
They're like an elite group of aliens who move into town, and they have black. They're like greasers.
Aren't they kind of sticking out? Yeah. Wouldn't they want to like be the men in the black suits? I thought that was
always good. That's what I was thinking. Then I thought it was like reverse psychology. Yeah. And people, it was like a really good cover because they're like, oh, those people are weirdos. But it's like, oh, they got black leather jackets. Oh, that's just their thing, man. So no one will ever.
And I just
them.
Watched this movie, Only Lovers Left Alive. And it's like a vampire movie, but it's very atypical. And they kind of live a quasi-normal existence that they go out and they interact with people, but they definitely look vampiric, but at the same time, it's like, it's always the person that, I don't know, if you see someone weird, you're like, oh, they're probably not as weird as they look or something. But so it's almost like the perfect cover is like being what you'd expect to be, the stereotype, so no one believes that you are actually that or something. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, right, absolutely. Yeah, if you're going to hide in plain sight, it's like, why not? Why not pretend to be an alien? It's like everyone will just think you're delusional. It's weird. Uh-huh. Alan, was there one or another?
Oh, yeah, I got a ton of these here. I'm trying to go through them. Here's one that says, great show, but I find it sort of annoying that you do not tell us the names of the songs you play. I don't understand why you can't let us know in some way so we can go buy the music.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's. I'm glad to hear people are enjoying the music. That's really...
Yeah, good to know. That surprises me, I guess, but I never thought anyone would care to... Well, huh, interesting.
I mean, I've linked to the music in my shows, but my shows have been, I don't know, the people that have produced that stuff are not like, I'm just not pulling it off iTunes or something. They're either guests or I know them. And, but yeah, that's, I don't know, that's a lot of, it's not that we couldn't, I guess, but at the same time, I recognize a lot of the music that we play, but maybe we just have different, I don't know. If Guillaume wants to do it, let's do it. I'm just not gonna do. I don't think I'm so lazy and a procrastinator that it's like, oh, one more thing to do at the end. Probably not gonna do it.
Here's a nice simple email that says was in reference to episode 81 back March 2014. Welcome to the Enigma Machine episode. Someone wrote in, quite possibly the most interesting conversation I've heard in a very long time. Thank you both.
That was really a great nice. Episode. And I mean, that was in reference to like the Nazi code breaking, right? Or it's like Alan Turing was trying to break the Enigma machine, or do you know that? Mm-hmm. Am I right in what you were referencing there? Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
Yeah. No, Turing is so. I love how he killed himself with a cyanide laced apple. It's like so dramatic, but he did have a pretty dramatic life, I guess, when you really think about it. That was like really fucked up what he went through, and also his legacy. It's just like such a strange figure, and kind of haunting. I don't know. And he's also one of those figures where his belief system has become like totally slanted, so he's become the high priest of this kind of mechanized high priest class of like scientists and computer engineers and all this shit. But at the same time, he even said, hey, there's like bounds of reason to everything I'm saying in regards like to machines and what they're capable of and artificial intelligence. He always like warned not to go too far. And he said, like, there's something indecipherable about the human experience that you can't even equate with a machine. So he even admitted like right off the bat, don't bother. Don't bother trying to equate this to the human being. It's not the same thing.
What's up with the apple?
What?
What's up with the apple? He ate a cyanide apple. Did he make it? Did someone give it?
I'm pretty sure he made. I mean, he was a smart dude. I'm sure he could pull it off.
But he did it.
Why did he do it? Because he was a homosexual, and at the time, the British government actually had some kind of laws in place where he was punished for that, and was made to take basically mandatory hormone treatments, and he just wanted to die, so he did. He like helped defeat the Nazis in World War II, or maybe we didn't defeat the Nazis, or I don't know, the Nazis were the good guys or something. But anyway, he played a part in that whole drama, and he was like just totally fucked over and pushed to kill himself. So yeah, he ate the apple and killed himself with cyanide.
Play loud.
Say again?
Weird. I was referencing Full Circle and in Pharma. You know, the green apple on the front of every fucking Beatles album. The apple.
And Rene Magritte has I think it's a Son of Man poster. It's the guy in the suit, and he's got the apple in front of his face, the green apple. And it's a...
Right, which is the hilarious thing, that it's fucking Son of Man and Man's Son, and then the fucking green apple scene. And with Mia Farrow in full circle, that's how the kid dies at the beginning, is choking on this green apple. So my next question about this guy was like, is the cyanide apple green, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, I think that work of art is like the perfect symbolic representation of synchronicity. I think like on the poster I have, it says like, the things we see mask the things we want to see. Or I don't know, it's not exactly that, but it's something about... looking for meaning behind the superficial, basically. And here you are, like this dressed up, or this person in a kind of business attire, this kind of mask, they're wearing this business mask, and then they're almost, you know, you eat the apple and you're filled with knowledge, but you also become almost separated from the garden by doing that. So it's a devil's bargain, but there's a value to it. But you have to find your way back somehow. So in that sense, like, he ate the apple, he's clouded by the apple, it's brought all this quote-unquote sophistication, whether you know, fashion-wise, academic-wise, all these things. So we have this air of sophistication by eating the apple, but really we've, like, masked ourselves to this primordial process, which is, like, actually guiding everything. Or, to an extent, way more involved in our lives than we'd care to admit. It's kind of eerie.
Yeah, it's appalling. It's appalling. No, it's appalling.
Yeah.
what's appalling is, like, you know, you tell these examples of someone who was like forced to commit suicide over being gay and trying to, like, this sounds so like an old idea. Like, one of my favorite artists, Beardsley, the guy who, if you guys look at, like, the Sync Book Radio logo, the guy staring into the crystal ball, it's actually a drawing he did of Merlin from King Arthur. One of my favorite artists, and he had, you know, a similar sort of experience. And to see, like, people being sort of abused for their sexuality sounds like such an old thing, and it's still a very real issue. It's just fucking stunning and appalling reality here. I was going through a bunch of emails, and when I did the synchronize about Red Ice, I got a bunch of emails. I don't want to read a lot. There was some really intelligent ones that I probably should read, because there was intelligent and supportive, amazing comments. But this was probably, I just want to say, was just reminding me of, this is one of my most favorite emails I ever received. It's a really simple thing. The subject line is "Shit's weak." Message: I used to like your show, then you got all Jewy about everything. Congratulations, your show officially sucks. And the reason, aside from the fact that it's like such a funny email, it's like Andras and I had this conversation. Do you think this guy even ever listened? I doubt that this guy actually was a listener. Because
we've always been
Jewy. That's my point. Like, we do episodes, like, we're constantly talking about Kabbalah, and Andras is constantly talking about being Jewish, and it's like, I realize, like, of the 7 books that we've published, I think, you know, how many of the authors are Jewish? And, you know, how many of our, like, you know, how many of our radio people? I was like, wait a second. Wait a second. We've always been pretty fucking Jewy.
Maybe people don't realize that Kabbalah is related to Judaism.
No, it's English, Dave. It only comes from England and the white people that aren't Jews.
Well, that's what Madonna said.
Yeah. Actually, oh my
God. Someone was asking her what Kabbalah was, and she was like, "Oh, it is a study of the New Testament." That's literally what she said. I was like, she knows that it's not a study of the New Testament. What the fuck is she talking about?
I don't really know if Madonna really knows anything. Do you really trust that she does? Why?
She knows enough to know that it's not a study of the New Testament, but she said that.
Well, maybe she thinks, I mean, like, I don't know. I get what you're saying. I just don't think Madonna's on to anything, really. I think there's, some celebrities that obviously know stuff and incorporate in their work.
No, her husband is hip to Who, it.
Her husband or ex-husband, like, she's married to Guy Ritchie.
Or she's not married to Guy Ritchie anymore. I don't know.
But I love his movies. His Taste in Women's horrible, but his movies are really good.
That was a funny moment when I watched the MDNA tour video.
And
there's this whole deal in that I forget what they call themselves. I think it's simple, like the Kabbalah Society or whatever, the mainstream Kabbalah thing that she's into. You know, they have this whole thing with, I believe it's the 72 names that they use for power. Okay. And they'll literally like take a name and they'll like imbue themselves with the energy through the name. Yep. And if you watch this video, you know, there's points where it just shows these stills, and if you look closely, you can see she's got 3 Hebrew letters on her back at different points. And I looked up what those letters were. I didn't know what it was for initially. This is how I found this out, about that they have this whole thing of imbuing themselves through the power of these different names. But then I'm watching the video and I see this guy jump up who has 3 Hebrew letters on a shirt, in white, on a black shirt. And I can't freeze frame it to figure out what the letters are as I'm watching it, you know? And then out of the crowd of like a million people, you know, it's crazy. There's so many people, right? This fucking Madonna concert, big thing on goddamn Netflix. They show the guy again, and then they show him again. They showed him like 3 times. And the 3rd time, he jumps up, and there's a perfect opportunity to see what it said on his shirt. And so I'm like, oh, it's 3 letters. It's probably just one of the names. Well, I look up what the 3 letters are, and it was literally translated in my Hebrew dictionary to old hag. An old decrepit woman or whatever. I thought that was pretty clever of the guy. You know, but then I was like, the cameraman, do they know what it says? Or are they just like, ooh, he's got the Kabbalah edge or whatever, you know, because they see Hebrew letters. I don't really know.
You know, I saw these Facebook posts, someone saying something like, oh, Madonna, like people, like as if, you know, Madonna, talking about her sexuality and all this sort of stuff, or lost sexuality and all these sorts of things. And it's weird that it's still like a topic of conversation for people. Like, and I normally would just chalk it up to like celebrity culture. But, you know, the idea, when you just said this idea of her as the old hag, don't forget the god, like, so she's Madonna, right? She is the virgin goddess. She is all these things. Don't forget, the goddess is triple face, and what is her 3rd stage is as the crone, right? The old hag is an important aspect of that goddess.
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but personally, I think Madonna's still hot as hell, but that's my own, you know, that's my own trip.
No, I'm
not
saying
that that's the point, but symbolically, yes.
Yeah, yeah,
you
could
still want to bang an old hag. It's okay. There's nothing like
I don't think she's an old hag.
Or unusual.
I really wasn't trying to call.
She's Madonna's kind of guilty. I'm just saying, you know. Call me old fashioned. Call
dude,
me thrill,
charisma goes
but,
so far. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter.
Oh, no shame in my game. can I read you guys a letter that I got?
Please. Yeah.
Okay, so this is about Lamb Exorcist from Gerard Tomoculus. Can you guys know who that is?
No.
It's on Facebook. It's not like an email, but he said, okay. Definitely sync The Exorcist with The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Really heavy syncs from the title track right on through to the Chamber of 32 Doors. I'm not familiar with this album. I've been meaning to try this, but I haven't gotten around to it, is what I'm saying. This, I'm not reading the letter. Okay, so Start the Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, just as the title track music comes in for The Exorcist. After the Warner Brothers logo and its music is gone, Lamb fades in as Exorcist plays and titles roll. Buzzing Fly comes in on the song before we see Father Merrick in the desert. No gaps between tracks. Lily White, Lilith, start after the Chamber of 32 Doors as you would all other tracks. No gaps. It struggles a bit after the Colony of Slippermen, or maybe that was just me on overload by that point. The chorus of the Carpet Crawlers kicks in as Linda Blair is pissing on the floor at the party. The Lamb stream seems right out of place, is some. And as Father Merrick finds the relic that is out of place with the rest of the findings at the dig, the whole scene and the part of Lamb was damn eerie. There's just one more part. In the Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging, as Gabriel sings the Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging, all ready to use. The Grand Parade of Lifeless Packaging, just need a fuse. Is when Ellen Bernstein is showing Linda Blair the Ouija board found downstairs by the ping pong table. And then David Ames says, right on, you must be bursting with pride. And so it turned into a conversation. I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I thought that was interesting. I'm not familiar with the album. I am familiar with The Exorcist. And I've never tried playing The Exorcist with something that I can remember. I mean, I may have 12 years ago or something. But this sounds pretty cool. I've been meaning to get around to it. So if anybody wanted to try that, I would encourage it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why, you know, I think normally if people were to actually read mail, that's why I'm kind of skipping a lot of these. We have some great letters here that are just nice emails, you know, but I wanted to kind of hit some of the ones that seemed like people can act on them. You know, we're not going to be able to discuss it because we haven't seen what these people have seen, but for people who want to explore these further, try it out, you know. If one of these movies or albums sounds like the thing for you, like, oh shit, I love that band, I want to see how that plays out. Do it.
Yeah, there's a few that I've gotten from people that have just completely blown me away. I mean, Patrick, obviously, Patrick has come up with some incredible ones. Patrick pointed out to me that on 7/7/1977. You know, the 007 film, The Spy Who Loved Me, came out, and the same day as that, Styx came out with The Grand Illusion, and that is a fucking phenomenal one. And if my computer was working, it would be up, just like Prometheus would be up. But yeah, just nuts. If basically you start the Styx album the moment that right after the gunshot happened, so when he. You know, at the beginning of every James Bond film, when he points his gun at the audience and shoots, and then the blood of the audience rolls down the screen, on the gunshot is when you start that album, and you just let it loop. And actually, the second and the third time through for that album, it only gets better. In fact, the scene that Kubrick filmed, you know, that's really nuts. You see what I'm talking about. You guys know that Kubrick did the lighting for The Spy Who Loved Me, and his daughter was part of the way that the ship would open to release the ship within the ship, you know, the Russian doll or whatever. You guys know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
A Spy Who Loved Me?
Yeah, it's a 007 film.
Can I reveal something here?
Sure.
I've never seen a James Bond movie in my life.
Oh, good. That's, you know, whatever. But, I mean, yeah, it's cool.
I've also never seen Godfather.
Oh, shit.
Like, you know, there's, like, certain movies that everyone's supposed to have seen. Never seen a Godfather, never seen a James Bond, bunch of shit like that.
Yeah, well, there's certain things that are very, like, I mean, sync-wise, those are very, I mean, James Bond is modeled after John Dee, whose codename was 007, and he has his famous sigil, you know, the 777 sigil thing. And so that's why it's so interesting. You're like, oh, well, John D, 007, the film comes out on 7/7/77, which is already suspicious. And then this album there's the amount of parallels is unfucking believable. I don't even want there's certain times when you're dealing with the synchronicity that there's just so much there that I don't even want to bother to start pointing out specifics just because it's off the charts. That one is off the charts for sure. But yeah, I found that really interesting. I looked at an interview of the director of The Spy Who Loved Me talking about how they brought in Kubrick undercover to do the lighting for that scene. It's pretty nuts. And then the Godfather thing is crazy because the fucking give him an offer he can't refuse is the last line on John Lennon's Double Fantasy, which is a reference to the Godfather horse head getting cut off. Meanwhile, you know, if you look closely at the cover of Sergeant Pepper, you can find the guy with the gun aimed at John Lennon from Stanley Kubrick's The Killing behind the people. If you look at the making of the album art, you know, he's there. That guy, what's his name? Do you guys remember? You had the whole license plate thing.
Oh, I can't. But I thought Lennon was the Godfather because he was bigger than Jesus.
Right? Well, that's... but it's just basically that's weird, and especially if you watch it with full circle, you know, right when David Bowman dies. So David Bowman dies, and then he says, let's give him an offer he can't refuse, ha, 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 which is really cryptic and weird to have at the end of that album in the first place, you know, which feels like a goodbye album to his son, as far as I can tell. And then you're like, well, Red Rum was a famous racehorse. You have The Killing. You have the guy from The Killing aiming his gun at John Lennon on Sgt. Pepper. And then he ends his final album with Give Him an Offer He Can't Refuse, which is a reference to cutting off the racehorse head and the Godfather and putting it in the bed. You know, it's just, it's
and, you
really
know,
weird.
You just mentioned that the movie came out on 7/7/77. And yeah. In The Killing, if you look at when the guy, that frame.
In Sgt. Pepper, that frame.
Yeah, as I'm saying, that where he's got the gun pointed, what they cut out and use in Sgt. Pepper. But if you look at the actual movie, next to his head is a license plate that says either 77 or 777.
Yeah, totally. It's right. Yeah, I know. It's blowing my mind. And so I watched a Twilight Zone last night with Mickey Rooney, where his name is Grady, and he's a racehorse jockey. And he did some criminal activity, and he's supposed to have lost everything. And he ends up seeing himself, his alter ego, in the mirror, and he's fighting with his alter ego. And he's basically told, it's in his own brain. It says, hey, I'm in your fucking frontal lobe or whatever. But it's him.
And his name is Grady.
Yes.
And you remember, I think it's John Phil Ryan pointed out that in The Shining, every time, like when Jack's walking down the hallway and he keeps like twitching, he twitches every time he passes a mirror.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Right. So like he's walking down the hall and then he gets to where the mirror is and he goes, ugh! And then he keeps walking and then he hits another mirror and goes, ugh! And like punches his palm or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's like he's fighting. Yeah. So like he's fighting. He's like repulsed by his reflection or fighting with the man in the mirror. So I'm so glad you brought this up. You're apparently on a Twilight Zone kick, but you said you've been watching them randomly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I watched, if you watch the first season of The Twilight Zone, you can see, like, to me, I felt like there was a pretty strong idea that I should never speculate on intentionality, but there was at least three or four different episodes that seemed like direct precursors to 2001 A Space Odyssey, like where you could see like bits and pieces taken. And this has been over a year since I sort of was doing this and taking notes on everything. But man, if you just go through that first season, maybe you'll see what I saw. Like,
no, I was tripping out last night. And this isn't first season. I think this is like third season because it's like 1964 at this point. It's after post-Kennedy, right?
Mm-hmm.
With the one with the guy with the computer, it was so relatable to 2001. It was ridiculous. The computer falling in love with them, but the nature of the way that the computer is communicating and everything just totally felt like it was connected for sure. But I've been observing it the whole time, what you're talking about, and not just 2001, but Kubrick shit in general. Even like I was saying, like The Killing, like this totally reminded me of The Killing in a way, you know, just the nature of it. The guy wishes to be big, He's like, I want to be big. I want to be the biggest. Mm-hmm. And then he's 10 feet tall, and he can't ever ride horses again because he wished to be so big. And so it's exactly
it
has this whole kind of like, you know, phallic statement or whatever. The guy's insecurity, and he's like, I want to be big, you know. It's like that.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I mean, there's I think the connections between Twilight Zone and Kubrick run really deep. Like, the fourth episode ever is called The 16 Millimeter Shrine, which has like an actress like kind of going into the movie screen. So obviously, like, instead of she's going into it instead of coming out of, I'm just kind of like
the Purple Rose of Cairo.
Yeah. There's one where even there's like this talking slot machine, right? And they call it like the one-eyed bandit and one-armed bandit or whatever. But it has this like light at the top, and it says like 1,000 or whatever. Like, I guess like that's like the jackpot. But they do this whole thing, and the machine keeps talking throughout the episode. And it's, to me, it's like HAL 9000.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
the one-eyed bandit.
Yes, exactly. The one-armed to the one-eyed. If someone wants, like, what I really wanted to do is, like, when I was watching this, I was like, I wish I was just sitting here with someone doing this marathon, or, like, just tell a guy like Mark LeClaire and be like, dude, if you want to fucking play with this, check out that first season of Twilight Zone.
Yeah, man.
It's pretty funny. It's like all these different things that are kind of like scattered little thoughts that I've. You mentioned like the three letters on the guy's shirt. I've just dropped this on Facebook the other day, but I had a realization that in math, right, you use the Greek letter delta means to change, like you're measuring the change in something, and psi is not only used as the psychological association symbol, but we use it as like mind. It's like where we get like the words from. So I was like, if I see something where they use a combination of delta and psi, that would be a really interesting way to kind of put in there like changing someone's mind, whether that be evidence of mind control or whatever it might be. I was like, I'm curious to see if there's ever any instances of this being done. And within days of thinking that, I'm thinking like, I want to keep an eye out for this and keep an eye out for this in movies. I saw the movie poster for some movie called The Neighbors, which is like Seth Rogen moves in next to a frat house and he's something. I don't know. I didn't see the movie, but on the poster, the kid, the frat house guy, has a T-shirt and it's Delta Psi, I think like Beta or something. And I went and I like the shirt's kind of covered, so I went home and Googled it and looked it up, and no, like that's their frat house is like Delta Psi. So, you know, I haven't seen the movie. I don't know what the connotation there would be, but these are sorts of things where it's kind of like actionable intelligence, right? Like, hey, here's a node that maybe people want to keep an eye out for. If Kubrick and Twilight Zone are your thing, check that out. If you're into the mind control aspect, keep an eye out for seeing Delta Psi in movies.
Yeah, I just found a article today that I was reading about basically how the current torture program from America is directly correlated to MKUltra and the specifics around that. And that was kind of some heavy shit, but very documented and empirical evidence for the connection there. I mean, seems like a given to me, like I would assume that, but you can't just assume something, otherwise you sound like a conspiracy nut, you know? And so I still sound like a conspiracy nut, but at least I have.
Okay, when you say MKUltra, are we just saying a CIA, or are we saying some kind of like special section of this? Okay, special, this is special.
Like specifically MKUltra was a huge program with lots of umbrella projects, but that the actually the same people involved, the same organism, it's directly okay. Stemmed.
Because I mean, like the CIA doing it's like not even. not even a question. I mean, what do you want to tie it to MKUltra? Okay, that's another question. But I mean, like, there have been some great books, like Shock Doctrine's my favorite, that outlines how basically a CIA manual has been applied to economic warfare. It's like, it's just, I mean, that's the business they're in. And then, I don't know, what's MKUltra doing that the regular CIA isn't doing? That's all pretty disgusting. How much worse could it be?
Well, it's just a specific project that had specific, that what was under investigation was MKUltra. It wasn't just the CIA. It was the people that were part of that project and what they were up to. And some of the specifics of what they're up to is basically just torture. Like they'd keep someone in a coma for an very long period while we're playing recordings to them over and over again, drilling holes in people's heads, this kind of fucked up stuff that you're just like, oh my God, people did that. And that's the most heinous stuff from the CIA that I've seen has come from MKUltra, especially when it comes to stuff we've done to our own citizens, you know, to our own country. And so that's really what upsets people, especially in the 1970s when the hearing happened in 1977, wasn't just that this stuff was going on. It was that, oh my God, but we're doing it to ourselves. It was like, we've seen the enemy and it is us anyway. I mean, it's always been that way, but for whatever reason.
Right, we don't mind doing it to the other, though.
Right, and so this is like...
One of my favorite...
...country to our own people is South America, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that goes back to, like, the Tuskegee experiments. I'm pretty sure, maybe I'm forgetting the name, but there was all these... medical experiments on African Americans, even as far as the 70s or not too long ago. And so that's like well documented. Again, a historical fact, then it's like how far do you take the historical fact? And so I think you can take a lot of directions. And no doubt it's like, I believe what you're saying. I'm just interested to know the interest. That's all. Just because I feel some.
Oh, it's on my Facebook page, and I haven't read the whole thing. I just went through
it.
Yeah,
no, it is interesting. Don't get me wrong.
I woke up this morning and I just started, And I posted it to my page because I could see that what was being referenced. I looked at some of the specifics, and I got the idea. I was like, oh, yeah. I mean, you never know until you really research something, but, it seemed pretty fucking legit.
Right,
and enough so for me to feel inclined to post it.
And it's like, it's similar to the scholarship of like someone like Joseph Atwell, I'd say, where it's a lot of it is correct. And it's like, it's even connecting the right dots in the right places, but then there's this leap and it's like,
well, what you're extrapolating
it is very much an interpretation. And so as long as we're all honest that, okay, we're interpreting and we're just being like, we are taking a leap here, but every theory takes a leap. So can we just be honest and move on instead? Like, I don't know. He's kind of settled into some sort of dogmatism, I'd say, about his points of view, and that's always dangerous. And it's just like, why does it have to be that? His scholarship is part of something that points in, as far as the big picture goes, hey, original religion was fucked with, and there's something actually really deep here and mysterious that we should all be exploring and getting in touch with, which is what Sync is all about. So, like, it's interesting, a lot of this, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. It's the reductionists in us that I think like focus on these minor things. Not that it's not fun or it's not, it's all mental masturbation anyway, but we zoom in too far.
No, it's not. Cause that's in terms of accountability. I mean, if you want to have a hearing for people who are doing crazy torture shit, that's not just
it's not,
mental masturbation thing. That's a let's put things in sure. order, and the only way to have that ever happen is, I mean, nothing ever happened with MKUltra until a word got spread to such and such a degree, despite the fact that thousands of Americans were experimented on. It wasn't until the public started to become aware of it at all that anything started to actually change.
And I do appreciate it being preserved for the historical record. At the same time, I'm not so confident anyone's going to be brought to trial. Anyone in power, right? We're talking about how power works. That's cool, Alan. I got.
Well, they're going to be from other nations. It's not going to come from ourselves. We have other countries are getting involved in our shit and trying to hold. I mean, the
well, so, and it's right. I get it. Like, and it's almost like it's like you need some. You need the other to hold you responsible. Like I when I went away for the holidays, I passed the Tuskegee Airmen like memorial. Like it was like a sign on the side of the highway. Pull off here for the Tuskegee Airmen memorial. And I was thinking, like, if you grew up in a town. Like, and like, where does the memorial come from? Does the government, does government taxpayer funds put up a thing saying, hey, this is what your government did to you? Like, there's all this weird thing. And I was like, Matt, so if you grew up in this town, do you grow up knowing that, like, hey, here's a constant reminder that, yes, your government doesn't give a shit yeah. about you? Like, you would think that would breed, you know, some sort of revolutionaries right. or whatever. But I don't see it. I mean, I should never do things like this, but I happened to see a friend of mine look on, like, he commented on something on Facebook called, like, right-wing news. Now, he's a black man who was upset about Ferguson, and he was, like, arguing with somebody. It just says, this person's commenting mm-hmm. on whatever. So, of course, I look to see what it is he's commenting on, and my God, it was, like, people saying, if you're a protester protesting in the street, you should go to jail. And then people are like, it was the picture. And then other people are in the comments are like, they shouldn't be jail. They should be run over. They should be shot. They should be whatever. How dare they inconvenience people on their way home from work trying to protest, oh, wow. blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, all the things that it said, like I felt more and more nauseous as I'm going. Like, people have such a level of cognitive dissonance that it's like, how dare anyone question this thing that I would assume half the people commenting on are just, you know, eventual victims of as well. Maybe not to the same extent. They're not going to get ripped out of their car and beaten by a police officer, although they might be. That happens to white and black people. It's not like it's not just a black issue. But whether it's the whole idea of the system, you know, spying on them and, you know, stealing their money and fleecing the economy to spend on war, and these the people should be upset that anyone would protest against it is kind of hard to not lose faith in humanity when
it's Brave New World. It's like totally what the social engineers of the early 20th century had in mind for a society. It's the perfect collection of self-policing, self-reinforcing feedback loop where you educate them to be that way, you traumatize them to be that way. And so again, like, this is MK Ultra, I guess, on a mass scale, right, David? It's like just trauma-based mind control, kind of. Is that how you characterize it?
There's R, which is its own type of mind control, in a sense. I mean, it's not really controlling, it's influencing.
Sure.
And so people don't realize that they're even capable of being influenced because of their own arrogance and in their own mm-hmm. consciousness. They don't feel subject. Everyone feels that they're somehow above that, and then they're always shocked if someone like, you know, Darren Brown comes along and actually makes them reflect on how susceptible they are. You know, I have my own theories. I feel like I didn't realize how huge Scientology actually is, how much money is behind it and everything. And I look at that as just a way to kind of weed out who the most susceptible people to hypnosis are, you know, all over, and just to, you know, so that makes me suspicious in terms of if you want to get into like Manchurian Candidate type shit. But just overarchingly, just people kind of like submitting to the, you know, to police state shit and all this, you know, it seems like there's strategy involved. Where, you know, MK Ultra comes in is more specialized. Like, it seems to be like the torture thing is an example. And with, you know, everyone be trying, we take a specific person and we fuck with them to the point where we can get them to be influenced or in whatever yeah. kind of way, or they don't even care. They're just fucking with people for the sheer right. pleasure of it or whatever they're getting from it. But no, if you're getting into mass hypnosis stuff that's intentional, you're basically just talking about public relations utilizing different psychological tools that, you know, like Century of the Self would argue is mainly from like Freud and whatnot, but I would say that it goes, you know, way beyond that.
It's magic. It's occult warfare. It's symbolic. It's just manipulation of the message. And yeah, it's like an inverted form of kind of like what we're playing with, only used in different ways. So it really is. I mean, that is magic. It is manipulation of consciousness towards some certain end.
The propaganda is magic.
Yeah, it's in. No wonder these people in power are attracted to occultism. It's they view themselves in the same way, only they get a lot more material benefit from it in certain positions. Right. So of course they're all congregating and then like bringing in a bunch of people that don't know what's going on, like in Bohemian Grove. So there's the people in the know. And then there's all these like frat boy idiots that they bring in to just watch the owl statue get lit on fire. And they provide an energy to the ritual and the ceremony. That's all they're there for.
Yeah, well, there's costume parties too.
And they're all and sexual just, energy too, because they're all fucking each other too, of course. I mean, not all of them. But, I mean, that's going totally. On. I mean, I think for all the shit Alex Jones does, I love his Bohemian Grove videos. They're just classics to me in the conspiracy pantheon.
Well, you can thank the guy who did Kubrick's boxes for that.
Why is that?
The first guy who ever got access to Stanley Kubrick's boxes, who was allowed to do that documentary, Kubrick's Boxes, that was his documentary. And it got handed over to Alex Jones to do that
of it, basically. Okay, interesting.
Which was the thing. Is that Eyes Wide Shut came out a year to the day of the Bohemian Grove happening.
Okay.
And that was specifically emphasized by Kubrick. Not only does it have to be this date, I want it big on the poster. I've talked about this before here, but I found it really interesting then that you're like, what, Eyes Wide Shut's grand premiere was a year to the day as Bohemian Grove, which is the closest representation of that, as far as I can tell, in a Hollywood film that's ever fucking happened. And then you have, you know, a year to the day. And the guy who fucking filmed it is the only guy who was ever permitted to look at Kubrick's boxes. So very suspicious.
Okay. Can I, I'm going to have to go. You guys, you know, please keep going and enjoy your day. And I'm sorry I won't be able to join you. You know, because otherwise, if I keep staying on the line, I'm going to blow my CIA.
That's cool. That's fine.
Right.
Yeah, you know, once you're talking about the heavy shit, I gotta go. No,
I should probably.
That's fine. All of us should probably leave. Go ahead.
Can I just you mentioned Alex Jones. I gotta say something, which it doesn't matter. I mean, everyone has their different opinions, whatever. But again, another Facebook thing that I looked at simply because I see people posting things and I'm sort of, you know, in that space is that psychological social experiment, you know. I see somebody post a story from Prison Planet about Citibank renting out space in the Capitol building, that they've signed a new lease, that they're, and they're like, look, the illusion is gone. The banks are actually operating out of the Capitol building. The illusion is over. And the person who puts it up and all these people going, oh my God, that's so fucked up. That's so whatever, right? And I'm like, did that really happen? So I click on the link and I go to Prison Planet. And they got this article there. And the first sentence of it is, I kid you not, right? And there's nothing in the article to say that it's not true. I'm not even sure if the people at Prison Planet knew that it wasn't true, if they did their homework or not. But I thought it was interesting that the first sentence was, I kid you not. And then I'm looking at the website. I mean, I haven't looked at that website in years, but I see, like, I mean, it is a fucking graveyard of, like, crazy pop-up ads and just, I don't know. Like,
oh,
just,
shit.
It is, you know, all these things that say this is a really illegitimate site just by looking at it. But the fact that people were sharing this, and there's a ton of comments like, oh, this is crazy, and this shows how the government is controlled. And again, you're not going to hear me say that I like the banks, or that the banks don't have an incredible influence over the government. Like, so symbolically, yes, this is an appropriate story, but it's not true. It's not true because, you know how like there are news aggregators, so then you click and see where's the source of the story. So I click for the source of the story, and I go back to this other site, and this person's saying, blah, blah, blah. You know, can you believe this happened in the fall of the Republic and whatever, whatever. And then I look for their source and you go back. And I had to go back three steps till finally it was from the New Yorker magazine satire section. Okay, it was basically like an Onion article for all intents and purposes. It wasn't true. But nowhere down the line did anyone wet. So it's like, even if the meaning behind it is it might as well be true, the fact is that quote-unquote truthers aren't actually concerned with the facts or the truth, seemingly. Or that, you know, people like Alex Jones, at least, are not interested. They're interested in hyping a story, getting ad revenue and stuff like that.
What did that really take you, 3 fucking minutes to find out?
Right.
You know? It's incredible. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't take you long to cross-reference things in order to be like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. All I did was follow their own sources back and back and back and back and back and back till I found the person who actually wrote it the first time, wrote it as it was a satire article. Anyway, so it's like, I don't point this out to say I'm in disagreement with anything that's being addressed here. Just to say, like, this was part of my frustration. I've been really, really frustrated lately with, particularly like doing the Sync Quick News. I feel like I'm back into a little more of a new paying attention to news stories. And that's always really frustrating for me because then you see, like, the lack of that I'm doing what's essentially a comedy and a causal sync show, but I care enough about journalistic integrity that I don't want to say something that's not true.
Mm, yeah.
But a bunch of people calling themselves truthers, right? They're going to fight for the truth, say they have the truth. They can't be bothered to, you know, verify their sources. Like, if that, as you said, David, it didn't take me more than 3 minutes.
And at some point, is that even like a story anymore? Isn't that just an accepted fact that this is the way our society is run? That is the nature of power in our society, is concentrated financial interests, largely buttressed by corporations, and that is what it. That's just what it is. And I don't need Citibank. I don't need some sensationalized story anyway. It's like, I didn't learn about this stuff through Alex Jones or Prison Planet or sensationalism. It's just like, hey, here are some facts about the reality of our situation. It's like, what are we in, and what is the point of all this? Like, what are you caught up in? What is this hamster wheel you're running on? And that's like, that's all I care about. And so I don't, and after a while, it's like, this stuff has diminishing returns for me. Like, I can, like, I know you're probably a little burned out re-engaging with the news in that way. And it's, for me, it's the same reason or the same thing. It's like diminishing returns on this stuff, no matter how you define that. And so that's, I guess, why I gravitate more and more towards the artistic, synchronistic aspects of whatever my attention can fixate on at any one time. And that has less diminishing returns. It like expands more than contracts, which is important, if that makes any kind of sense.
It totally makes sense. But I also, I mean, I'm with David in the sense of it's not, it does have, I totally sympathize with what your statement of diminishing returns. It's frustrating and annoying. And yeah, how many Prison Planet articles do you need to read? Or how, if you listen to Alex Jones every day and he goes, the New World Order, the New World, like, how many times do you have to hear that before you go, okay, yes, the banks have way too much fucking control over the government. Like, yes, as you say, once you realize that, you either do something about it or you don't, or what is the question? But David's point of, like, it's not necessarily navel-gazing, it's, these are real repercussions. So, like, while I'm with you is that I don't know how to, like, I struggle with, well, then what do you do about that truth, or, you know, like, that reality? Right. What then do you do with it? But I still don't think it's completely a lost cause to pay attention, because, you know,
In the world and we're part of it. And so I'm not trying to come off as being completely dismissive. I'm just,
Oh,
Yeah,
I know.
I play devil's advocate, and at the same time, I have an impetus in both directions, so I have to pick a side sometimes. And so, yeah, in this case, it's no, it's not. And like I mentioned in the past, it's like I'm very grounded in just kind of like more practical matters, but at the same time, it's like sometimes I come back to them kind of like to light a fire under myself, but which is probably what you guys do too. But yeah, I just like I do have kind of trouble fixating, but I'm not saying you're fixating either. It's just like how do we spend our time? I guess that's just on my mind quite a bit. And what are we using our attention for? So that's all. 'Cause we only have so much time. It's like we're running out of time. We really are. And yeah, maybe reincarnation happens, but it's like it's not never going to be easier the next time around. So anyway, we probably got to go, huh? Okay.
Yeah, and just please know that I wasn't I'm not
No.
criticizing you for anything that I don't criticize myself over. It's a
Yeah.
question of how the fuck do I balance knowing and being aware with the reality of like I don't want to be ignorant and I also sometimes very often don't know what to do with the
Yeah,
information or the
because
truth that you
right, because you
find.
just have to know, I guess, like what to question and how to question, and that's part of it is like knowing what you stand completely opposed to, and that's important for sure. But anyway, so I guess we'll leave it
All
at
right,
that, huh?
guys.
I'll talk to you guys later.
You got it. Guys, have a good one.
See ya.
Later on, man. Thank you.
Later on down the road.
Stop her.